EWTN Family Prayer with Father Joseph.
Family, a prayer that we pray together is a powerful prayer. So please pray together with me, our EWTN Family Prayer. Today we pray for peace. Lord Jesus, Son of God and Son of Mary, we praise and thank you. You have taught us that peace is your gift to us and have forbidden us to be troubled or afraid. Free us from anxiety, Lord. Dispel fear from our hearts and give us a deep trust in your abiding presence and in your promises. Manifest your providential care for us by meeting our needs this day, and let us tangibly experience your love. Jesus, we trust in your promises. Amen.
The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right, enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
Did I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong?
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. She's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Very nice to have you with me on The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday. Normally, I would say email, but I have evolved. I've grown. I like to think of myself as much more linguistically sensitive than I used to be. Email. Rather patriarchal. It's rather limiting, cutting out 50% of the population, actually about 52% now, because we guys live riskier lifestyles and we die earlier. But e-person is more umbrella-like. It's a big tent piece of language. It is what it says. I take a look at your missives. No, I can't even say that. That's kind of narrow. Missives, probably should say Ms-ives, and see what comes in. Come from the TV show, they come from the radio show, and then I will read them and stop periodically after a sentence or two, because I like to read between the lines and speculate as though someone's talking to me. So we shall get to that, but for the moment, the monologue. I will sometimes tease my clients. What would your mother have done had you talked to her the way your daughter is talking to you? No, I didn't talk to my mother that way. Why not? You were a teenage girl once. Teenage girls are so automatically snotty and surly. Why weren't you? Well, I may have felt like it, but I didn't do it very often. Why not? I knew. You knew what? Something would happen. What? I don't know. Why don't you know? It never happened. Why didn't it happen? I never did it. Why didn't you do it? Something would have happened. What? I don't know. Who's on first? I don't know. Third base! It's an Abbott and Costello routine, but it speaks of something. I know many of you listening to me right now either look at your grandkids and perhaps the way they let their emotions and verbal barrage loose on their parents, or you're listening to me now and you have your own kids who do this. And you think to yourself, I didn't do that. Now, I'm sure some of you did, and your memory's a little fuzzy.
Live from the KATH 910 AM studios in Las Colinas and broadcasting across North Texas on the Guadalupe Radio Network, this is the Good News Show.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this Monday edition of the Good News Show here on KATH 910 AM and also KCPP 1140 AM, our Fort Worth station. And this is a very special day. It is the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception. But this interview that I'm doing right now and this show was actually pre-recorded in advance. And so we're celebrating the Solemnity, and you'll see in a moment very much connected to what we'll be talking about for the majority of this show, and that is something really amazing and I think once in a lifetime experience that's happening this Friday at the National Shrine of Our Lady Guadalupe. And it's the Mass of the Americas that will be happening Friday evening beginning at 7 o'clock, and this is a very, very special event, and it is going to involve the music of my phone guest, Frank LaRocca. He is a composer in resident at the Benedict the 16th Institute for Sacred Music and Divine Liturgy, and it's going to be his music that'll be highlighted in this special Mass. I also have in studio with me Rich Kelly, who is our dear friend, and he's done a lot to bless Catholic radio. He is the primary sponsor of this event, the Mass of the Americas, coming up on Friday. So I say that, and I'll get to these guests in just a moment, but I do also want to thank everybody for your support of the Share-a-thon last week. We had our Christmas, the Gift of Faith Share-a-thon, and I know many of you listened, you prayed, you called in, you made donations. And so the reason we're able to do these kind of interviews, the reason we're able to highlight amazing events like what's happening on Friday is because of your support. So thank you very much if you did support. And if you didn't and you still want to, you can go to our website, grnonline.com, and there's always a chance to donate. And so let's get right to it. And again, happy Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception. 4 days from now, we'll be celebrating the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. So what an amazing week this is. In studio is Rich Kelly, and he's the one that kind of got instigated or suggested this interview in the first place. So Rich, welcome, and thanks for being here.
Well, David, thank you for having me, and I appreciate your taking the time and giving us this time slot to discuss the Mass of the Americas.
And so tell us, how did you get involved? You're the majority sponsor of what's happening on Friday. And I know this is tied into what's happening here in the Diocese of Dallas with the Synod and this anticipation of what's going to happen 6 years from now, the big 2031 celebration of 500 years since the initial, you know, miracle of Guadalupe. So how does it all tie together?
Well, there's a couple pieces to that, Dave. I became aware of the Institute of Benedict the 16th through other members of the Catholic community here in the Dallas Diocese about 2 years ago. And they had an introductory reception. I made a modest donation. And the executive director of the Institute followed up with me. Her name is Maggie Gallagher. And we met for coffee a couple of times, and based upon what their plans were, and I thought it was wonderful, I committed to be the major underwriter for the Mass of the Americas at the National Shrine of Our Lady Guadalupe here in Dallas. And the bishop, I had nothing to do with getting the bishop's approval, but Maggie went and got that, and so here we are.
Yeah, and I also want to tie this in, as you mentioned, to the local diocese, because it was really about 4 years ago, December 12th, 2021, that the diocesan synod process began. I know this is something very important to Bishop Burns and the entire Dallas Diocese, and it all was looking forward to 10 years from then, 6 years from now, 2031, and this has had to do with the listening sessions and the synod. So you're actually part of that. Aren't you one of the reps for the Synod?
I attended one of the listening sessions, and I was one of the delegates at the Synod. We voted on some 370 propositions, and it's been turned over to an implementation commission, which I am not involved with. This is all public information. It's out there in the Texas Catholic. And it is, you are correct, Dave, it is aiming towards the 500th anniversary of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Our Bishop Burns put the synod in play, or called the synod, aiming towards having the plan in place and implemented to coincide with that 500th anniversary.
Yes.
So this is, we're about halfway there, and this is a step that kind of fits.
Yeah, it certainly does. December 12th, 2031, in Dallas, large mass is going to be celebrating the 500th anniversary of Our Lady Guadalupe's appearance to San Juan Diego and the conclusion of this decade-long journey of faith and revitalization. So we are a few years into it and still many years to go. So let me transition now, and Rich, feel free to jump in whenever you'd like, but I do want to certainly bring in our phone guest, Frank LaRocca, composer in residence at the Benedict XVI Institute for Sacred Music and Divine Liturgy. His Mass of the Americas has been hailed as perhaps the most significant Catholic composition of our lifetime. That was from Michael Obash. And according to Michael Linton, the best liturgical music for the Mass, and you might need to correct me here, Frank, since Durufle, did I pronounce that right?
It's close, Durufle.
Okay. Can you, many of our listeners might be meeting you for the first time here on the radio, and, you know, this is an extraordinary event that's going to be happening just 4 days from now. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background and your music and what we should know about this Mass of the Americas that will be coming here in a few days in Dallas?
Well, the short version is that I was born into a Catholic family, baptized as an infant, and went to Catholic school through grammar school, received all the sacraments, drifted away from the church as a result of an event that took place in Dallas, and that was the presidential assassination. I was tremendously devoted as a young boy to President Kennedy, and I could not reconcile that event with what I knew about God. And so my faith kind of drifted for many years, but I did return to the Catholic Church about 16 years ago. My father was a musician, and I guess that's how I got the bug. I took piano lessons as a child, played in rock and roll bands like any 1960s teenager, and then began the formal study of classical music when I went to college. I earned degrees in music from Yale and UC Berkeley, got my doctorate in music composition, then had a career as a professor of music theory and composition in California. As the time of my return to the church, both the preparation for that and then the aftermath took place, I became increasingly interested in finding how my work as an artist could be tied to my life of faith. And so I began composing sacred music, that is, music on sacred subjects, setting sacred texts, eventually composing masses. And through that, I came to meet then Bishop Corleone, who was installed as Bishop of the Oakland Diocese in California in the same year that I came back to the church. And I really do believe that the hand of God was present in this, because he and I did not know one another, but we had friends in common who kept inviting us to events where we would both show up and, oh, hello, good to see you again. I mean, this happened repeatedly, four or five times in the space of a few months. Consequently, and because the because now Archbishop Corleone is a very musically astute man. He studied music himself and has a great sensitivity and understanding of music. He was very interested in what I did. He eventually commissioned me to write a communion motet for the celebration of the 50th anniversary of the founding of the diocese in Oakland. He was very pleased with the result. And so years later, when he was in the process of founding the Benedict XVI Institute, he was then Archbishop of San Francisco, he remembered me and asked me to be their composer in residence, which I was very, very honored to accept. And so since then, that was 2018, he and I have worked side by side on, I think, half a dozen musical projects that are inspired by his pastoral vision for not just the Archdiocese of San Francisco, but for things concerning a worthy and reverent celebration of the liturgy in the Catholic Church everywhere.
And, well, thank you for that explanation. Frank LaRocca, composer in residence at the Benedict XVI Institute here on the Good News Show, along with Rich Kelly in studio. And I'd like to also connect our former Holy Father, Benedict XVI, whom the Institute is named after, and maybe you could make a comment about him, because many people associate Benedict XVI of happy memory with liturgical beauty. In fact, he wrote a book on this. And so obviously the namesake is very significant, isn't it?
It is indeed. He really does stand out among popes of the last 75 years as having the liturgy and its proper celebration as a central focus of his thought and writing. The book you're referring to is called The Spirit of the Liturgy. It is one of the most influential and important books on the subject of the liturgy ever written by any pope, for that matter. And because he was also a musician, he was a very good pianist with a very fine knowledge of classical musical literature. He was chosen by the Archbishop as the namesake and spiritual guide for the Institute.
You know, it's interesting with, it says here that Pope Francis had called originally on the Americas to prepare for the momentous occasion in 2031, and from that spawned the Benedict XVI Institute, and then Archbishop Corleone had a three-pronged project meant to answer Pope Francis's call. And the very first of the three prongs was a new celebration of Frank LaRocca's Mass of the Americas with a focus on cathedrals and parishes dedicated to Our Lady Guadalupe, which, of course, the Shrine of Our Lady Guadalupe certainly qualifies. And so this is very, I mean, of the three prongs, he's focusing on your music being a part of this. That must be quite an honor.
Oh, it certainly is. It's a very, very great honor. And the response of the Institute to St. Francis's call, which I believe took place in about 12 years before the anticipated 500th anniversary of the apparition of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Just the timing on that, the Institute already existed. It existed from 2017. So, and the first project that Archbishop Corleone gave me, and this again predates Pope Francis's call, was motivated by his own experiences as a parish priest and then later as a bishop. Those experiences are serving as pastor at a bilingual parish south of San Diego, which is where Archbishop Corleone is from, right literally at the border of the southernmost border of California and Baja California, in a town called Calexico, which is itself a hybrid of the word California and Mexico. He came to deeply appreciate the devotion, spirituality, and culture of his primarily Spanish-speaking Mexican parishioners. And then when he was Archbishop in San Francisco, he naturally carried over that interest to the Spanish-speaking, largely Mexican segment of his flock in the Archdiocese of San Francisco. Now, every year, coinciding with the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe on December 12th, there is an organization in the Archdiocese of San Francisco called the Cruzada Guadalupana, or the Guadalupe Crusade. And every year, in celebration of her feast, they organize a pilgrimage that travels the entire length of San Francisco, and because of the way San Francisco is shaped, that's about 16 miles, and it travels through the city, concluding at the steps of the St. Mary's Cathedral in San Francisco, whereupon, to culminate the Crusada, they celebrate a mass. In 2018, Archbishop Corleone, looking at the calendar, noticed that the day on which the Crusada Guadalupana would take place, and it's always the Saturday closest to December 12th, that Saturday happened to be December 8th, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. And he thought, what if we had a mass that demonstrates and celebrates the unity of all Catholics under the patronage of Our Lady of Guadalupe, patroness of all the Americas, and Our Lady of the Immaculate Conception, patroness of the United States? He said, we're one people, we're one faith, we are diverse, we worship in different languages, but we are all her children. What if we could have a mass that somehow symbolized through the merging of European musical traditions and traditional devotional hymns from Mexico, a mass to demonstrate this unity? And what he had in mind was the example of the friars of the early California missions. When you look at mission style architecture, when you look at the style of the mission churches that they built, the form of it is, it is, there's no mistaking that it is a church, and it's modeled after church architecture that these friars learned in Europe, where they were all born. But they incorporated elements of local design and decoration and materials into these new mission churches. So they represent a hybrid of the old world and the new world. And so the Archbishop said, I want a mass that does something like that with music. Mm. And that's how Mass of the Americas came about.
Well, thank you for that. That ties in very nicely. There's a reviewer from Fanfare that said, La Rocca has managed to create a modern Missa Solemnis that is undeniably stirring, seamlessly blending Gregorian chant with Latin American folk melodies, organ and carcass orchestra with marimba, guitar, and handbells, all instruments with deep roots in Mexico. I was floored by the beauty of the music, floored, and then lifted to a different altitude of existence. That's quite an endorsement. I'm sure you've read that. So for somebody who is not very musical like me, it certainly sounds like a synthesis that you're bringing in a lot of different elements. Can you describe the music a little bit more? I know you've already done that, but that endorsement, what else would you say about that?
Well, sure, I'd be happy to. So the Archbishop and I had several meetings to discuss how we might go about doing this. And what he said to me was, I want you to use at least a couple of the most beloved Mexican melodies, which they began their life as devotional hymns, even though through the years, they've started to occupy a different place in Mexican culture. One of those is called La Guadalupana, and this is a tune that almost anybody who's ever heard a mariachi band at a wedding or some other event has heard it sung. And it's the text of it celebrates the apparition of Our Lady of Guadalupe at Tepeyac Hill out in Mexico City. The other one that he suggested to me is known as Las Mañanitas. That was music that was associated originally with text having to do with King David and the Blessed Virgin Mary. Nowadays, it's most commonly known in Mexican circles as what they sing at Happy Birthday. So we have music to which the Mexican people have a very deep attachment. The challenge would be, and this is where we get into the analogy to the mission churches, is how to take something local and specifically cultural and demonstrate its universality as an element of Catholic worship. Shortly after he made the commission, and this is where I continue to be astounded at the hand of Providence, I picked up, a handbill, or I saw a poster on a board somewhere, and it said that there was going to be a celebration of a mission music mass. Not as a mass, but just as a concert. And it was going to be taken from the music that was written in Mexico by the Franciscan friars for the mass celebrations there. And I thought, well, gosh, this ought to be a great little, touchstone for me. And I went to it, and I got a sense of how that music worked in the context of the mission era. And so I decided that Mass of the Americas would begin with a processional. Or I learned at this concert that masses in those days always began with a particular processional, a song called El Cántico del Alba, which means the Song of the Dawn. And this was a song that families on their way to church on Sunday morning would sing as they left their homes and walked to church. It was a family processional, if you will. This is how they prepared themselves to go to Mass. And so I brought my own arrangement of the El Cántico del Alba melody and words to Mass of the Americas as its introduction or its processional. Finally, I had an inspiration about the moment in which Our Lady appeared to St. Juan Diego. And I was thinking about it, trying to put myself in that moment, and it hit me over the head that she wasn't speaking to him in Spanish. St. Juan Diego was not a Spaniard or a Spanish-speaking man. He was a descendant of the Mexica, the Aztecs, and his language was Nahuatl, which is actually still spoken by quite a few people in that part of Mexico to this day. And I said, I asked the Archbishop if I could do a setting of our beloved Ave Maria in Latin, as we know it. Of course, in English, we know it as Hail Mary. If I could do a setting of that prayer in the Nahuatl language. Because this kind of ties the most distant, in terms of time, element of the whole Guadalupe event to the present day. And you said it sounded like a great idea, and go ahead and do it. That is where the marimba that was referred to in your quote that you started this segment off with, that is where the marimba came into play, because the marimba was invented in southern Mexico and Guatemala. And I thought, okay, I will use an instrument native to that part of the world where Our Lady appeared to St. Juan Diego as part of the setting of her prayer in St. Juan Diego's language, almost as if we could have an experience of St. Juan Diego praying to her in his language and being accompanied by instruments that would have existed at that time. And so that is in Mass of the Americas, that song occurs as a post-communion meditation. And it's different from the rest of the Mass in that it is for a solo singer, solo violin, marimba, and organ. The rest of the Mass is for full chorus, chamber orchestra, which includes a guitar and organ.
Are your musicians local, or are you bringing them in with you, and how many will be involved in this Mass of the Americas?
The musicians are local. At one of the parishes in Dallas called St. Rita's Catholic Community, you have there really one of the top Catholic liturgical music directors in the country, really. His name is Alfred Calabrese, and they have a very fine, a very robust music program at his church. And so Al is using a core in the choir of his St. Rita's choir, and then augmenting it up to 24 singers from local Catholic liturgical singers. And then the instrumentalists are also from all from the Dallas area. And so the it'll be conducted by Al, who has conducted it several times before and sung by Texans and performed on instruments by Texans. And the results should be excellent because Al has very high standards of quality, which he learned under his, when he was a protege of the great choral conductor from Atlanta, Robert Shaw. That's perhaps not a name that everybody knows, but in the world of classical choral singing in the second half of the 20th century, Robert Shaw was a giant. And Al learned his craft under Robert Shaw.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Perhaps not coincidentally, I actually went to St. Rita Parish last weekend, first time I've been there in years. And I didn't do that in, with any kind of anticipation that we were going to talk about this. But one of the things that struck me was, well, Father Josh Whitfield, the pastor there, is a great homilist. But the liturgy was beautiful, and I noticed the music was really nice. So maybe God was planning in advance for this. And just want to remind everybody, this is the Good News Show. We are celebrating today the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception, 4 days away from the Feast of Our Lady Guadalupe. Of course, we are the Guadalupe Radio Network, so it's something very special to us, very special to the Dallas Diocese. Our national shrine is named in honor of Our Lady Guadalupe, and how fitting that we have on the show today, a pre-recorded show, Frank LaRocca, composer in residence of the Benedict XVI Institute for Sacred Music and Divine Liturgy. And everybody is invited to join Dallas Bishop Edward Burns this Friday, December 12th, the Feast of Our Lady Guadalupe, for an extraordinary celebration of Frank LaRocca's Mass of the Americas at the beautiful National Shrine of Our Lady Guadalupe, 7 o'clock Central Time. And I think our understanding is that EWTN is going to be there recording this, and they're going to play it Friday evening beginning at about 9:30 Central Time on the EWTN Global Catholic Television Network. And before I move on to my next question for Frank, I want to bring Rich Kelly in because he's been sitting here patiently and taking all this in. He's our in-studio guest. He's the primary sponsor of this event. So, you know, Rich, I guess this is why you do what you do. I mean, this is, sounds like a beautiful event that we're planning for, but any comments or questions for Frank?
Well, it is, and I think it's telling that the populace at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe is the demographic profile that Frank's talking about. It is a heavily Hispanic, heavily Mexican community that worships at the cathedral. And I was struck while he was talking about what the ideas that went into it and the synthesis that produced this Mass of the Americas, how appropriate they are for that setting. I mean, it just struck me right between the eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're right. Let me just elaborate on that a bit more. So the texts of the Mass are in Spanish, English, a little bit of Latin, and then finally the Nahuatl that I mentioned in connection with the post-communion meditation. So it really is, it really embraces a sense of unity because liturgy unifies us as Catholics. We all come together as one to give right worship to our Lord when we attend the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. And to have this diversity of cultural expressions unified in the way that I approached Mass of the Americas. I know the Archbishop really has been very pleased with the result. He's celebrated himself in many places, most recently, in fact, at the Basilica Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico City. We had Mass of the Americas celebrated and the music sung there in the Basilica Shrine right before the Tilma. And let me tell you, everybody left that place changed in some way. It was an extraordinary thing. The holiness of that shrine, the tremendous spiritual power of that tilma, which is, of course, a miraculous artifact. And just as vibrant today as it was, let me do my math, 495 years ago. And the the people there who were attending the Mass, who were primarily just the pilgrims who every day come to visit and pay homage at the shrine. I was told by those who are familiar with the masses at the Basilica that they were struck by how utterly silent the tourists were. They said they had never heard that place so dead quiet during a Mass. And I think that even though the people wandering through wouldn't have had any idea precisely what was going on, I think they sensed the holiness of the Archbishop's offering of the Mass that day.
Frank, I got to ask you a question. First of all, I'm just so honored that, you know, in what is being called a twinned tribute to Our Lady the Immaculate Conception and Our Lady Guadalupe, as you've already explained the significance of it, for you to be here this week as we celebrate these two great feast days. And I just can't help but return to what you said at the beginning of this interview and the significance of the assassination of President Kennedy. And I just wonder how significant it will be on Friday when you're here and you're going to be within a couple miles or maybe a few miles from that location. And I'm just kind of where, you know, that's where you lost your faith with that event. And so can you tie that together, or is that significant to you that you're going to be right there where that event happened?
Yes, indeed. Several years ago, I was in Dallas for another event, and I had enough free time to drive over to Dealey Plaza. And I spent quite a bit of time there looking at the Texas Book Depository, looking at the bronze plaques in the ground marking the spots where everybody was standing at the time. And that, now, this is a really almost freakish coincidence, but that, plus the fact that Abraham Zapruder's grandson was one of my composition students at the university where I taught.
Oh, wow. And just for reference, so people know, that he's the one that made the famous the Zapruder film, yes.
Yeah, and, you know, when I met him, I said, I didn't ask him if he was related to them, because I'm sure he spent his whole life having people ask him that question. So, but when we, on our last day of our last lesson, he gave me a gift, which was his sister's book about the experience of the family as a result of everything that surrounded that film. Anyway, so I went to Dealey Plaza, and I prayed there, and it was a very healing moment for me to confront as directly as I could all these years later this blow in my life. I was 11 years old. I was 12 years old. I'll just say that the way that Dallas has memorialized that place is very beautiful. It's very tasteful. It's very dignified. And I believe it does allow for all those who visit to not just learn about it, but for those for whom it had a personal meaning, to have some kind of catharsis surrounding the event.
Part of your bio, Frank, says, trained as an academic modernist, which you came to see the modernism as a barrier to authentic musical expression, you spent many years in search of your personal creative language. Would you say that this Mass of the Americas is kind of a culmination of that search, or is this what that search ended up with, the beauty of the Mass that we're going to be able to experience on Friday?
Well, it is certainly one of the fruits of that search. When I was a student, primarily in the decade of the 1970s, I started college in 1969, and I finished my doctorate in 1981. That was a time during which, if you were a student of music composition, classical music composition, you were expected. Nobody ever demanded it outright, but, you know, everybody knew what the score was, so to speak. The only acceptable style in academic circles in those days was a kind of music that emerged out of modernism, extreme modernism, immediately after World War II and then through the 1950s, which came to be known as academic modernism. And it was a style based on a primarily nihilistic worldview, that is a worldview that denies the existence of things like the good, the true, and the beautiful, that sees reality as consisting of only matter and energy, that does not acknowledge the existence of spirit or God. And it is, to most ears, just chaotic and ugly. But if you wanted to have your career in an academic institution, if you wanted to go on someday to teach music theory and composition in a university setting, you had to have your doctoral degree, and you had to essentially run that stylistic gauntlet to get there. And so the music that I wrote in those years was not at all like, it did not emerge out of my native musical language, the music that was in my heart. And I succeeded. And then I discovered, after I got out of school and was back in the world and independent and had a university teaching position, that I couldn't go back to what I had been doing before all this, that somehow my imagination had been corrupted. And I was caught between two worlds. I was caught between the world of this ugly academic modernism and the world that I had before that, which was a more traditional, beautiful, classical style. And that was the struggle. My struggle was how to regain, essentially it was like a struggle to rediscover my own musical soul. And so I undertook that process. And during these years, I was outside of the Catholic Church. I was outside of any church. I was really an agnostic and not thinking very much about God or anything. But in my search to discover a description of beauty that was more than subjective, that is, a description of beauty that was more than, well, I think it's beautiful, so there, rather a description of beauty as a true and objective thing, not subject to the whims of opinion, but a real, subsistent, objective truth. Well, if you're searching for that, you're going to bump into God.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are got the three most telling characteristics of God. The unity in him of goodness and beauty and truth.
Amen.
And so that got me back into church, and it was a long undoing of the secularism that I had absorbed mentally, philosophically, during all those years. But eventually, in 2009, as a result of two close brushes with mortality, is the best way I can describe it, it became abundantly clear to me that the Catholic religion of my youth, which I had learned fairly well, even if I hadn't continued to live my life according to those principles, that the Catholic faith of my youth was the only home for my soul and for my children, and was in fact the place that my search for objective beauty had led me to. And so I know I've already said this several times during the interview, but I guess you could say I'm a great believer in divine providence, because I wasn't looking for God. I was just looking for a way to defend a particular stylistic approach in musical composition. But God set me on that path so that I would rediscover him as an adult and could live the mature faith of an adult.
Very nice. Frank LaRocca is my guest, composer in residence at the Benedict XVI Institute for Sacred Music and Divine Liturgy. We're down to less than 10 minutes. It's been a really honor to have this much time with you, Frank. We really appreciate it. And I just want to remind everybody, this is the Good News Show. It is the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception. We are a few 4 days away from the Feast of Our Lady Guadalupe. And what an honor it is to have the Mass of the Americas that really unites these two amazing feast days in our church. And the Mass is going to be 7 o'clock Central Time this Friday evening at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in downtown Dallas. And Rich Kelly is in studio with me. And Rich, I'm sure a lot of people listening right now are thinking, I want to go. I know according to the information I have, it's a free event, but they want people to register. Do you have any idea here 4 days ahead of the event? If people can go, would they be better off just watching EWTN because it's going to be too packed? I know it's all kind of prognostication, but what would your advice be?
Well, you've got me, obviously, without, as you say, it's tough to prognosticate. Obviously, the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe is a huge feast for the community at the cathedral. So there's going to be a lot going on anyhow. And I'm not sure what the seating capacity of the cathedral is, but I suspect it will be very well occupied already.
Mm-hmm.
I do not know how much space there might be left.
Yeah, that's probably the safest answer we can give. You can call the cathedral. You can go down there. I know, Frank, you can probably imagine with a cathedral named after Our Lady Guadalupe on December 12th, I just remember in years past, they've had masses like every 2 hours.
Right, almost continuous.
In the beginning, yeah. I think there might even be a midnight mass that, the dancers and the music, and it's a beautiful celebration. And so to have this as perhaps one of the culminating, perhaps the culminating mass of this day on Friday is going to be quite an honor. And Frank, we just have a few minutes remaining, and I would be interested in learning. Obviously, we're still 6 years away from 1531, and so what are your plans going forward? I imagine you're going to continue to be celebrating this beautiful Mass of the Americas for years to come, leading all the way up, and maybe even beyond that.
Well, I think probably so. This seems to be, I guess because we're 5 years away now, this seems to be an especially fruitful year for Mass of the Americas celebrations. On December 12th alone this year, it's going to be celebrated in Lincoln, Nebraska, someplace in Northern Virginia, in Dallas, at the cathedral in the Diocese of Orange in Southern California, and one more that I'm forgetting, can't quite put my finger on. And what I hope is that I'll be able to do things to help support the broader vision that the Benedict XVI Institute has for Project Guadalupe 2031. And that certainly includes celebrations of Mass of the Americas, but there is a home enthronement kit that the Institute has produced under Archbishop Corleone's guidance and with his approval, which consists of a newly written litany to Our Lady of Guadalupe, which can be prayed at these home enthronements. That litany was written by the distinguished young poet James Matthew Wilson, who is the poet in residence with the Benedict XVI Institute. And they have launched a project called Reverent Liturgies as part of the whole menu of things that the Institute promotes and supports to provide concrete tools to parishes who have a desire to celebrate Mass in a more reverent and beautiful way, but just they don't know where to begin. And so the Institute has put together some materials, advisors, to help people along that path, if that's where their journey as a parish has taken them. My own